meaningless thought. The shell appears strong, but the inside is rot. It's time to be stirred. The time is now. The winds have changed. Read the signs. No time to hide. The winds have changed.
Millennia ago, from the little cave on the tiny island of Patmos in the Aegean Sea, the heavens opened. Since then, the world has been fascinated by the cosmic upheaval brewing on the horizon of history. The upheaval is now upon us. It is within us. To some degree, it always has been. But there has been a sudden and violent shift in the affairs of the world. The winds have changed. Heaven will not be silent. Let's now join Father Anthony Bush, pastor of St. Stanislaus Kostka, the Sanctuary of the Divine Mercy in Chicago, and author of A Mother's Plea, For the Winds Have Changed. Together we can pave the way for a hopeful response to the signs of our times.
Hi everybody, and welcome on this beautiful, beautiful day in Chicago.
Good day.
Hi, Tony.
How are you, Father?
Nicholas. On the other side, Christina, wherever she is.
She's licking envelopes. Stuffing envelopes.
We're up against the Holy Week, so a lot to get done. Yesterday was so. Today is equally as beautiful, right. But it was so beautiful. So I had I didn't have to. I made it a point to get out, and I went Upper Wacker, Michigan Avenue. I have basically the route that I take.
Right.
Don't even have to tell the car where to go. It just goes
automatically.
So go Milwaukee to Kinzie, over the Kinzie Bridge or over Lake, under the tracks, Upper Wacker, to Michigan to 31st, 31st to State, north to Kinzie, and then back.
Nice. Full.
Yeah, I love Chicago's a beautiful city.
Right.
It's a beautiful city, but... So this was about, because I didn't have the Mass in the evening, so it was probably about 5 o'clock.
Nice.
So it was just, talk about a resurrection. I mean, like people everywhere. You know, for how many months has it been since we've seen so many people out in the streets and the bikers and all that?
It is weird to see people in shorts.
It is.
It's just April. I mean, come on.
Just beautiful. And just to hear our children in the playground, and so you can hear them, they're having fun, they're playing, you know, and it was just a picture perfect day,
right?
Just beautiful. And today's equally as beautiful. I haven't had a chance to get out, and I'm not going to get out because I've got things
to do
on the hour,
always so
I will not get out today. I just look through the window and see, but really beautiful, very beautiful. We're so ready for the sunshine, for the warm weather. Seems like the winter was a really long, cold winter, seems to me. But anyway, so how are you?
I'm okay.
Good. Okay.
This could is be better, but, you know, we could all complain.
We could all be better. You
right.
Know? But just breathe in the fresh air.
Yeah, exactly.
Absorb the
sunshine.
Because I think tomorrow it's going to change.
So I was waiting for that.
And then it may be snow.
Right.
I heard. So,
well, you know, it does snow in April. People.
Yeah, at this point, you know, but at least now this is a little bit of a tease, perhaps. Right. You know, it's God telling us, you know, it's coming.
It's coming.
It's going to come and it's going to stay.
Right.
And then you're going to complain because
exactly.
It's too hot, it's humid. And
I can't wait for the snow.
Right.
Here we go, the cold.
So anyway, I don't know about that, though. I don't know if I...
Yeah, every year we say this, and I think it's the same thing. I think I would rather, you know, I like the warm, but I think this is something about just cool, always being cool. What do you like, the hot or the cold? What can you?
Well, I don't like humidity. I don't like hot, humid weather. I prefer,
in the same way.
I mean, I think most of us would prefer like the September, October, May, June weather, April, May, June.
I don't like the snow, but I like it colder or cooler.
I like the snow when it... First, when it's coming down,
right?
You know,
not when you have
and
to
then
shovel.
That's it, yeah. So, but no, I think every year I tire of the winter more.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I feel more affected by the cold.
Yeah.
Whereas before, I mean, I used to never wear hats and all that. Now I
never do.
Although I've lost so much hair, you know, so.
Not really.
Yeah, well, compared to what I had when right. I was young, you know. So.
Right.
But I used to love to be, and I still like to be out in the cold. I like the really, 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 mm-hmm. really, really, really cold weather.
Yeah.
When it's that dry, almost sub-zero cold. I do find that energetic. I find that it gives me energy.
It does if you're dressed warmly and you kind of right. feel the like.
Yeah.
But it's
good. Well, see, now they got these jackets that are with the goose feathers.
Right.
They're really nice.
Keeps you warm.
I got one for $78.
It's a bargain.
And when I went to Rome, I took it mm-hmm. because Rome tends to, in January tends to be kind of a wet cold,
mm-hmm.
not cold like Chicago, but it is it's an uncomfortable cold, and this was perfect. It's just great. But even being back in Chicago when we had those really really cold days, mm-hmm. it was fine. I mean with a good sweater underneath,
right?
And that's
keeps you nice.
And the nice thing about that is whether it's really cold or if it's kind of what was it the other day? It was very comfortable. You didn't mm-hmm. really need you needed something, but
right.
so it's not like you felt overly protected from mm-hmm. the. I mean, I was comfortable either way. I'm not making any sense, but
no, I think I know what you're saying. Know,
so it's I don't know what they call those. Down jackets
yeah,
or something,
down jackets.
Maybe? Yeah.
Yeah,
and they're really
yeah.
light. You actually so light, and that's why somebody suggested it to me. You can just actually put it, you know, roll it up and put mm-hmm. it in its own pocket.
Yeah,
and then you can put it in your suitcase. And
I was thinking pretty soon it'll be like a second skin, and it won't be anything that needs to be really really heavy. It'll just be right. something that keeps the warm in and keeps you cool in the right. summer. You can have it at all times.
Well, that's kind of what this is, I think, you know. So
yeah.
anyway, so I got a few things today.
Okay,
we've got. Do you know what Kelsey Grammer is?
Kelsey Grammer. Yeah.
Yeah. yeah.
The Beast.
The Beast.
In the X-Men movies, he played the Beast.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, it's cool. I liked it.
So I think of him as from Cheers and
yeah,
from
Cheers too.
And what was the other one? The sitcom.
What's the guy's name when he was a doctor? Yeah, I can't think of it.
Frasier. Yes. Thanks, Nick.
Nick knows.
So there was somebody gave this to me today, and I want to share it with you because I thought it was kind okay. of interesting. So he's this prolific actor and a producer, and he writes on his journey to happiness, but. Listen to what he's been through. I mean, this was kind of mind-boggling to me. But his words to live by, and I like this, stagger onward rejoicing.
Oh.
Stagger onward rejoicing. I often speak of in life where tabaleando is a Spanish word. It's just mm-hmm. kind of, it says something. Staggering. It's like staggering. Mm-hmm. It's the same thing. Tambaleando, gateando, crawling through life, mm-hmm. But not crawling, but staggering.
Right.
Just muddling, fumbling, struggling through life. But stagger onward rejoicing. And he says, this line came to him when he was 15 years old. In his little refuge, which was his bedroom, after his dad was murdered and his grandfather died.
Wow.
11 years later, he found the line in Atlantis, this a poem by W.H. Auden, and that became his touchstone. In fact, he named his youngest child Auden. So he got this. So this stagger onward rejoicing comes from this poem called Atlantis. So his father was murdered, his grandfather died, he was 15 years old. His sister was attacked and killed, and 5 years later, his two half brothers died in a scuba accident.
Oh,
yeah, this is a lot. And he says, "I just persevered. I cried out to God, and eventually I heard him. The basic message was, I'm not out to get you. I'm here to help you." It's interesting, isn't it?
Yeah.
And he says, that helped me a lot. Ordinary human unhappiness is life in its natural color. You have a responsibility to keep going. So we speak about this all the time, right? Mm-hmm. On Sunday, I mentioned at the masses, you know, it's in the nature of this world to wound us, to hurt us, right? You can't deny that. Nobody can deny that. But it's what you do with that. Mm-hmm. And so he's sharing his own experience here. And then he says, the kindness of others. He says, I was in drama school at Juilliard with Robin Williams, whose life ended rather tragically. He committed suicide. Christopher Reeve, whose life ended
tragically.
And he said, I had $60 a month in Social Security from my dad's death. He says, I slept in Central Park for a while, and I'd shower at the school. It wasn't bad. And then he speaks to this guy, Joe, at the Emerald Inn, always poured me a free second drink, and a butcher would give me some ground round. And there was kindness throughout my life like that.
Wow.
The simple things, right? He says he loved to surf as a young man. He says, now I paddleboard and snorkel. He says, water releases the things that are not helping, cleanses off the old concerns. You come out fresh and you look at the world with new eyes. He says, I do believe that happens to us even when we take a shower. It helps us face the day with courage.
Hmm.
Some truth to that, isn't there?
Yeah.
It's very wise, very simple, very practical.
Yeah.
And then let's see, he says, and then this is interesting too, you know, he says, fourth time's a charm. He says, once when musing about a relationship, I was thinking, how did I get to this spot? Then I thought, I'm the mystery guest at a dinner being thrown by my own decisions. I pretty much married the same person three times and finally realized I would not do that again. I had to repeat things to get it. Now I married my fourth wife, and I have seven children and one grandson. It's pretty great. It's interesting, isn't it?
So it took him four times to realize?
Four times. Well, the first three times he married the same woman.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm assuming the same kind of woman.
Right.
Isn't that what he said? The same person three times. I pretty much married the same person three times. It's very interesting, really, you know, what brings people to gravitate towards a certain kind of person, and that person may not be good for that person.
Right.
You know, he did it three times.
I know a few of those people now.
Okay, but you're not speaking of yourself.
No, not myself.
Not. You've got a wonderful wife.
Yes, I did.
And then let's see, I guess they're going to reboot Frasier. Is that it?
Oh, they can't do that. I hope they don't. Are they going to use him too?
He says Act 3 would be Frasier has his stuff together.
Yeah, I hope it's him. If they do it with him, fine. If they don't, it's not good.
Yeah, I think it's him because hopefully we find something we really like and the network likes and we can explore a few years of life with Frasier. So
I might watch that, although I don't really watch TV.
Then he says 63 is better than 38. He's 63. Oh. I was 63. Yesterday I was 63. You know, it's funny because today's my birthday, so I just say that because it's just you and I.
I'm glad you put it out there.
Right. But I'm one of these, there are certain people that throw themselves parties.
Right.
I'm just the opposite. Yeah. I want to go into a cave. I want to disappear. I want to be away.
Yeah, but nobody lets you,
on my birthday. Well, they kind of do because I really make myself inaccessible, except at the... at the mass.
Right.
I remember one year, I got to tell this guy, Lorenzo, our beloved Lorenzo, after the mass, he belted out happy birthday.
Yes.
I don't like that. I just don't like that. So, but this is just different characters, right?
Right.
Some people, and I think God bless them, you know, they'll throw themselves big parties.
Well, look,
and why not, you know?
Father, everybody knows at work my birthday's in April. Right. I never tell them what day because exactly like you, I don't want the big issue I don't want. So last week they went ahead and...
Oh.
There you go.
Nick, I said I don't like that. So, you know.
He did. He does it, though.
Beautiful. And he kept it short.
That's right. That's a good thing. You know. He saved himself. Yeah. But yeah, they went ahead and decorated my desk on the day that it was not my birthday. So I couldn't be mad. I just was not happy.
Isn't that funny?
So I tried to be nice about it, and that's the way it is.
Why are we like that? Some people are, I say some people.
Then I thought about the people that care about you want to make it a celebration, but you don't.
Right. And the other problem that I have is that I don't reciprocate because I don't remember people's birthdays.
You're not supposed to. You're not supposed to.
And that makes me feel bad because then I feel guilty
and
because
see, that's the trap.
People remember my birthday, but I don't remember their birthdays. I remember my mother's birthday. Mm-hmm. I know all my brothers and sisters, their birthdays. Mm-hmm. And sad to say, I only remember it on the day of the birthday.
Right.
So I don't even, you know, I haven't, well, email, I can send an email message. But
I want to look at it this way. You're our pastor. You're our father, in a sense. So we as children are supposed to remember you,
okay,
but you're not supposed to remember.
Yeah,
because you have so many children. Just look at it that way.
We'll look at it that way. But but my father was like that too. He didn't.
Right.
He didn't. You know, his birthday
he loved
was.
You.
He just didn't. He didn't want.
Right. And that's what you probably get.
All that. Maybe, perhaps, but. But it's different characters, But anyway, so yeah, but it was strange today because when I exercise, and I'm pretty, really faithful to exercise, so I do the elliptical, I've got a rebounder, and I make it a point to exercise almost every day, 45 minutes.
At least.
At least 45 minutes because even today I went, I think I went almost an hour on the rebounder. And a little bit on the elliptical. So I try to do a little bit of cross training, whatever. So yesterday on the elliptical, the rebounder is just it's a trampoline, which is really.
So you're just jumping around.
Just jump up and down.
Right.
I've been doing it for 2 years, and it's the best thing for your body, especially as you get old, you know.
Right.
But the NASA did a whole study on this.
Mm-hmm.
And because these astronauts would come back from outer space and they would lose their bone density and all this stuff. And so this was the best exercise to rebuild bone density. And it moves the lymphatic fluids and all that. It's a good detox exercise. So it's really, I love it.
Mm-hmm.
And I do 45 minutes on that and I'll do 45 minutes on the elliptical. If I do 45 minutes on the elliptical, then I'll do an additional 10 minutes on the rebounder because I like that exercise.
Okay.
But I but what was interesting was yesterday. So when you do when I'm on the elliptical and I have a professional elliptical, so I don't have to go to a gym, and I've had that for many years. I used to belong to a gym many years ago, but it's just too expensive, and then you have to. It takes a lot of time too because you have to go and you know. But this so to do the elliptical, you've got to punch in your weight, your age, your time, and all that. Mm. And so for a year, I've been 63, and now all of a sudden it's
64.
And I was thinking, actually, I probably have had this over 10 years.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
Over 10 years. And so I said, how did I get from 54 to 64 so fast, right?
Feels that way, doesn't it?
But anyway, but he's, but in any case, so Kelsey Grammer, was the same age as I was yesterday. He's 63, and he said 63 is better than 38. He says, I feel even younger now than when I was 38.
That's good.
Can you say that? Would you say that of yourself?
That I feel younger now?
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't think so. I don't.
No?
Now that I think about it, I don't look at it. So
right.
It's like when you tell me, it's your birthday or whatever, I'm 10 years older than I was, I don't see it. I just see now that things are going faster.
Yeah.
So days are going fast as well. Okay,
too fast.
Yeah.
Absolutely. But sometimes I feel younger.
Mm-hmm. That's good.
You know, even going through all this other stuff with the cancer treatment and all that, in some ways I feel, now I can't say that younger than I did when I was 38. I think I'm more content.
Yeah.
In that sense.
See, I don't really look at age, to be honest, but people always think, you're not that old. I mean, when you know how old I am, it's like, I would have never thought you were that old.
That's why when I came here today, when I found out how old your wife was going to, I'm not going to mention it on the radio.
No, go ahead, Father. She's going to like that.
No, I'm not going to, because I told her on Sunday, I said, I can't believe you're going to be X number of years. And she said, how did you know? Who told you that? I said, well, somebody told me.
And then you know what she told me?
No.
Oh, it's going to be one day he's going to say it on the air. We're going to have a whole show about it.
I'm not going to do that to her.
I know. I want
but
you to
I couldn't believe it because I said, well, how could you be that age when Tony's only
this age?
This age.
And you were shocked.
And I was shocked. And so when I came in and I asked you, how old are you? And you told me 10 years younger than me.
Yeah. Which you just gave my
age away. Which I just gave your age away.
But that's okay.
But your wife is younger than you.
Exactly. By 4 years.
But she's already she's passing from
she's
one decade to another.
Yeah.
Figure it out. But, I just don't picture that. I still think of Christina as...
as a little baby.
As 22 right,
years
22
old. 22
years old.
It's a little baby.
And she's already middle-aged.
Middle-aged.
I guess you'd consider that middle-aged.
Who knows? I don't really look at age anymore.
Anyway. All right, everybody, we got to take a break. We'll come back and switch gears. But I thought that was interesting.
Yeah,
I thought that staggering onward rejoicing.
Wow.
Stagger onward rejoicing. Tambaleando through life. So true. All right, we'll be right back. I'm Father Anthony. You're listening to Listener Supported Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ.
Celebrate the Easter Triduum with a beautiful liturgy filled with sacred music, incense, and candles in one of the most magnificent churches in the United States. You are invited to the historic St. Stanislaus Kostka Church, the sanctuary of the Divine Mercy. The Triduum begins with Holy Thursday Mass at 7 p.m., Good Friday Liturgy at 3 p.m., Holy Saturday Mass at 7 p.m., Easter Sunday Mass at 10 a.m., St. Stanislaus Kostka Church is located just minutes from downtown Chicago at 1327 North Noble Street. That's 1327 North Noble Street, one block west of the Kennedy Expressway at the Division Street exit. Plenty of free parking available. For more information, call 773-278-2470. 773-278-2470. That's 773-278-2470.
The Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ and on the World Wide Web at windsofchangeshow.com.
Winds of Change would like you to know that Illinois will become even more extreme on abortion if several pieces of legislation are passed and signed into law. HB 2495/SB 1942 is known as the New York Abortion Bill. This bill makes abortion a basic right for any reason or no reason at all, up to birth. Among the many shortcomings, this bill jeopardizes any meaningful regulation of abortion clinics. Sadly, this bill would make Roe v. Wade seem pro-life in comparison. Then there is HB 2467/SB 1594, which is the repeal of the parental notice of abortion law. An abortion will no longer require the notice of just one parent when a girl under 18 years old seeks an abortion. This bill effectively takes the power from parents and transfers it to boyfriends, sex traffickers, bullies, classmates, and educators. Contact your local state senator and House representative this week. Do it now with a kind but firm message not to support these bills. Go online to sign a petition with your friends and families at ICE-PAC.com/petition. That's ICE-PAC.com/petition. For more information, visit the Winds of Change homepage on Facebook. Put your faith into action.
Welcome back, everybody. Thanks for being with us on this wonderful, wonderful day in April. The beautiful day. Couldn't it just stay like this all the time?
Yeah.
Yesterday, I felt like I had died and went to heaven. And just as I say, to see the people, just everybody came out of the woodwork. It's like, where has everybody been all this time? You know, I didn't know Chicago had so many people. And even at that time, driving, it was rush hour.
Yeah,
but it was just beautiful. Yeah. I didn't mind the fact that I was stuck in traffic. It was just this mob of people everywhere. And you know what's interesting is young people.
Yeah,
the city is just inundated with young people. I think those are the only people living down in the
looks like it sometimes
in the Loop area around there. They it was just nice. It was really nice. So I want to switch gears a little bit here. I think we're switching gears. Let me just say this. If I were God, I would, in this time where things are discombobulated, when there's doctrinal, moral, spiritual confusion, in a time like this, if I were God, this man I would put in the papacy, raise him to the chair, Peter. Do you know who I'm talking about? He's a cardinal, of course, from Africa.
Sarah. Yes.
This guy is, he is a genius. I mean, he's got a, well, let me just share with you. He's written a few books. One was Silence. This is a very beautiful book. Another one, something about nothingness. But he's a mystic. He's a mystic. He's a philosopher. He's a theologian. His family comes, he's from Guinea, French Guinea in Africa. And his family was converts. They were pagans. And they converted to Christianity, to the Catholic faith. And he's a cardinal, 73 years old. He is the prefect, which means the chief officer of the Congregation of Divine Worship and the Discipline of the Sacraments. I'm surprised he's not been ousted from that position because
give him time.
Yeah. But he's just got this keen way of thinking.
Mm-hmm.
But there's this new book that's come out now. It's the third of his book-length interviews with this guy, Nicholas Diat, and it's called The Day Is Far Spent. That's interesting because I wrote the Easter letter last week, and at the very end of the letter, and this was, I'm really inspired by the mural. I spoke about this a couple of weeks ago, about the mural, The Triumph of the Risen Christ. It's got all the characters of the Old Testament and from the Gospels and early years of the church and down through the history of the church, the saints. And then I, at the end of the letter, it's a short letter actually for Easter. I think I might have shared it here on the radio. But so I kind of actually, as if they're speaking to us, and indeed I think that they are. And but at the end, it's this commission. You're being sent. The night is here. The day is far spent. It really comes right out of Scripture. So I thought when I saw that his book is called The Day Is Far Spent, I felt like, you know, as
he was copying you.
Exactly, right. So, but it's how the Spirit moves, you know, right, through the church. You know, so you look for these prophetic voices.
Mm-hmm.
And am I saying mine is a prophetic voice? I would hope so. I'm hoping I'm reading the signs of the times. To be prophetic doesn't mean we're predicting the future.
No.
But we're looking at the faith from the perspective of the times in which we live. And that, in a sense, can tell us a little bit about where, if we don't change, if there's not conversion, if we don't return to the faith, then, you know, there will be dire consequences.
Yeah.
And so I believe that. But I want to run through some of his thoughts, because it's just to get into his head. And again, it's for this that I would like to raise him. I would like to raise him to the papacy. So I'm praying. Actually, I'm praying to the Lord that this guy
gets there.
So there's a question. You know, these are questions and answers. But in his book, the gentleman Nicholas Diat, I suppose this is who's asking the question. He says, you describe a spiritual religious collapse. And he says, how does this collapse manifest itself? And interestingly, he says, the spiritual crisis involves the entire world, Its source is in Europe. People in the West are guilty of rejecting God. They've not only rejected God, and he quotes Friedrich Nietzsche, a 19th century German philosopher, who claims God is dead, God remains dead, and we've killed him. We've murdered God. So in view of God's death among men, Nietzsche would replace God with a prophetic Superman. So he says, Cardinal Sarah says, the spiritual collapse has a very Western character. Now, listen to this. He says, in particular, I would like to emphasize the rejection of fatherhood. Yep. He says, our contemporaries are convinced in order to be free, one must not depend on anybody. There's a tragic error in this. Mm-hmm. He says, Western people are convinced that receiving is contrary to the dignity of human persons, but civilized man is fundamentally an heir. He receives history, he receives a culture, he receives a language, he receives a name, he receives a family. And he says, this is what distinguishes him from the barbarian. So, to refuse to be inscribed within a network of dependence, heritage, and filiation condemns us to go back naked into the jungle of a competitive economy left to its own designs. Because he refuses to acknowledge himself as an heir, man is condemned to the hell of liberal globalization in which individual interests confront one another without any law to govern them besides profit at any price.
Wow.
So in this book, he says, I want to suggest to Western people that the real cause of this refusal to claim their inheritance and this refusal of fatherhood is the rejection of God. From him, from God, we receive our nature as man and woman. This is intolerable to modern minds. Gender ideology is a Luciferian refusal to receive a sexual nature from God. Thus, some rebel against God and pointlessly mutilate themselves in order to change their sex, but in reality, they do not fundamentally change anything of their structure as man or woman. The West refuses to receive and will accept only what it constructs of itself. Transhumanism is the ultimate avatar of this moment. This is the ultimate manifestation of a deity. So he says, because it is a gift from God, human nature itself becomes unbearable for Western man. The revolt is spiritual at root. It is the revolt of Satan against the gift of grace. Fundamentally, he says, I believe that Western man refuses to be saved by God's mercy. That's interesting.
Yeah.
He refuses to receive salvation, wanting to build it for himself. The fundamental values promoted by the UN are based on a rejection of God, and that I compare with the rich young man in the gospel. God has looked upon the West, has loved it because it has done wonderful things. He invited it to go further, but the West turned back. It preferred the kind of riches that it owed only to itself. And then he says of Africa and Asia, he's from Africa, mm-hmm. Africa and Asia are not yet entirely contaminated by gender ideology, transhumanism, or the hatred of fatherhood. But the Western powers, neo-colonialist spirit, will dominate or will to dominate pressures to pressure countries to adopt these deadly ideologies. It's very interesting. It's very, yeah. Very true, you know, and that he has the courage to say it and say it the way he does.
Mm-hmm.
Another question, he says, you write that Christ never promised his faithful that they would be in the majority. And you go on, despite the missionaries' greatest efforts, the church has never dominated the world. The church's mission is a mission of love, and love does not dominate. You wrote, it is a small remnant that has saved the faith. So he says, if you will pardon the question, what is the problem exactly, seeing that this small remnant does in fact exist currently and manages to survive even in a world hostile to the faith? And he goes on to say, Cardinal Sarah, that Christians must be missionaries. They cannot keep the treasure of faith for themselves. This is an urgent spiritual task. As St. Paul says, if I proclaim the gospel, this gives me no ground for boasting, for an obligation is laid upon me, and woe to me if I do not proclaim the gospel. And further, God desires everyone to be saved and to come to the knowledge of the truth. How can we do nothing when so many souls do not know the only truth that sets us free, Jesus Christ? The prevailing relativism considers religious pluralism to be a good in itself. The plenitude of revealed truth that the Catholic Church has received must be transmitted, proclaimed, and preached. And I add the word unapologetically.
Wow.
The goal of evangelization is not world domination, but the service of God. He says, don't forget that Christ's victory over the world is the cross. It is not our intention to take over the power of the world. Evangelization is done through the cross. And of course, he says, the martyrs are the first missionaries. Before the eyes of God, their life is a failure. Their goal of evangelization is not to keep count, like social media networks that want to make a buzz. Our goal is not to be popular in the media. We want that each and every soul be saved by Christ. Evangelization is not a question of success. It's a profoundly interior, supernatural reality. It's interesting. And he says, should we take a break? We'll take a break. We'll come back. And I want to continue with you. Are you able to follow me on that?
Yeah.
This is a very profound.
It's very good words.
You need to hear that. We'll be right back. I'm Father Anthony. You're listening to Listener Support Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ.
Celebrate the Easter Triduum with a beautiful liturgy filled with sacred music, incense, and candles in one of the most magnificent churches in the United States. You are invited to the historic St. Stanislaus Kostka Church, the Sanctuary of the Divine Mercy. The Triduum begins with Holy Thursday Mass at 7 p.m., Good Friday Liturgy at 3 p.m., Holy Saturday Mass at 7 p.m., Easter Sunday Mass at 10 a.m. St. Stanislaus Kostka Church is located just minutes from downtown Chicago at 1327 North Noble Street. That's 1327 North Noble Street, one block west of the Kennedy Expressway at the Division Street exit. Plenty of free parking available. For more information, call 773-278-2470. 773-278-2470. That's 773-278-2470.
The Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ and on the World Wide Web at windsofchangeshow.com.
Winds of Change would like you to know that Illinois will become even more extreme on abortion if several pieces of legislation are passed and signed into law. HB 2495/SB 1942 is known as the New York Abortion Bill. This bill makes abortion a basic right for any reason or no reason at all, up to birth. Among the many shortcomings, this bill jeopardizes any meaningful regulation of abortion clinics. Sadly, this bill would make Roe v. Wade seem pro-life in comparison. Then there is HB 2467/SB 1594, which is the repeal of the parental notice of abortion law. An abortion will no longer require the notice of just one parent when a girl under 18 years old seeks an abortion. This bill effectively takes the power from parents and transfers it to boyfriends, sex traffickers, bullies, classmates, and educators. Contact your local state senator and House representative this week. Do it now with a kind but firm message not to support these bills. Go online to sign a petition with your friends and families at ICE.org. ICE-PAC.com/petition. That's ICE-PAC.com/petition. For more information, visit the Winds of Change homepage on Facebook. Put your faith into action.
Welcome back, everybody. Thanks for being with us. I'm sharing a little bit about Cardinal Serra from Guinea. He's the prefect for the Congregation for the Divine Worship and the Discipline of the Sacraments. And I say, if I were God, I'd like to put him in the papacy. You know, we need that voice. We need that prophetic. It's a very prophetic voice. He calls it like it is. And but let me go on and just share with you a little bit more of what he says. He sees the problem as European Christianity in Europe, which is very much dominated the entire West and has affected the whole world, contaminated, as he would use the word, contamination, and not completely contaminated Africa and Asia, but certainly is trying to make inroads into those societies as well, the church over there. But he says that this idea of European Christianity dominating or imposing itself through a kind of social coercion, he says that a society permeated by the faith, the gospel, and natural law is something desirable. It's the job of the lay faithful to construct it. That's their proper vocation. They work for the good of all when they build a city in conformity with human nature and open to revelation. But the more profound goal of the church is not to construct a particular model society. The church has received the mandate to proclaim salvation, which is supernatural reality, that a just society disposes souls to receive the gift of God, but it cannot give salvation. On the other hand, can there be a society that is just and in conformity with the natural law without the gift of grace working in souls? He says there's a great need to proclaim the heart of our faith. Only Jesus saves us from sin. It must be emphasized, however, that evangelization is not complete when it takes hold of social structures. A society inspired by the gospel protects the weak against the consequences of sin. Conversely, and this is a very interesting point, a society cut off from God quickly turns into a dictatorship and becomes a structure of sin, encouraging people toward evil. That is why we can say that there can be no just society without a place for God in the public sphere. A state that officially espouses atheism is an unjust state. A state that relegates God to the private sphere cuts itself off from the true source of rights and justice. A state that pretends to found rights on goodwill alone and does not seek to found the law on an objective order received from the Creator risks falling into totalitarianism. In other words, complete subservience to the state, centralized dictatorial government. And this seems to be what's happening, or there's certainly an attempt to move us in that direction because we've cut ourselves off from God. And it seems that the church, let me just say the leadership today seems to want to accommodate or accompany but doesn't seem to have the authority or doesn't project its proper authority, which is to bring people in conformity to the Creator, to God, and the laws of God, which would be, the natural law, which is written into the lives of all people. We rebel against that.
Yeah.
Then he goes on to say, you know, there's, this idea of freedom and religion, or freedom and truth. It says, over the course of European history, we've moved from a society in which the group outweighed the person. The holism of the Middle Ages, a type of society that still exists in Africa and continues to characterize Islam, to a society in which the person is emancipated from the group. individualism. So this is what's so valued in the United States and in Europe is individualism. Or broadly speaking, that we've passed from a society dominated by the quest for truth to a society dominated by the quest for freedom. And the church at the Second Vatican Council proclaimed the right to religious freedom, or religious liberty. And so the question is, how do you see the position of the church toward this evolution? Is there a balance to be struck between the two poles of truth and freedom? And he says it's not correct to speak of a balance between two poles, truth and freedom. In fact, freedom is essentially a tending toward what is good and true. The truth is meant to be known and freely embraced. A freedom that is not itself oriented and guided by truth is nonsensical. Error has no rights. Vatican II called the fact that truth can only be established by the force of truth itself and not by coercion. Respect for persons and their freedom should not in any way make us indifferent in relation to the true and the good. So, revelation is the breaking in of divine truth into our lives. It does not constrain us. In giving and revealing himself, God respects the freedom that he himself created. But the point that he's getting at is that modern man, his freedom, making it an absolute to the point of believing that it is threatened when he accepts the truth. However, to accept the truth is the most beautiful act of freedom that man can perform. He says, I believe that your question reveals how deeply the crisis of the Western conscience is really, in the end, a crisis of faith. Western man is afraid of losing his freedom by accepting the true gift of the gift of true faith. He prefers to close himself up inside a freedom that is devoid of content. Our freedom comes to fulfillment when it says yes to revealed truth. If freedom says no to God, it denies itself. It asphyxiates. The point is, you know, and this is freedom that somehow, I brought this, actually this quote from C.S. Lewis, the theologian and religious writer from the 19th century into the 20th century, who really resisted, he was an atheist as a teenager, and resisted God because he didn't want, or the sense that we're going to be then bound. You see what I'm saying? We want to be free. We don't want any constraints. And yet, basically what it is the free reign of the flesh, which, as Scripture says of its very nature, will lust against the spirit and just create all kind of disorder. No, we're supposed to submit to the spirit, that's truth, and that then brings us into true freedom. If we adhere to the laws of God, we become a free people. If we dispense with the laws of God, we're swimming in a sea of egos, right? Does that make sense?
Yeah.
But what happens is, in the absence of God, we subject ourselves again to this totalitarianism where we have complete subservience to the state, centralized dictatorial government. That it's the very thing that's going on in our own society here. That it's all about diversity and yet it's really not at all. You know, dialogue, freedom of speech, but you have to speak my language. If you don't speak my language, then you're
not
ostracized. You're to be dispensed with.
Mm-hmm.
You know, don't get in the way. Don't rock the boat. Don't impose on me those laws, which are the natural law.
Mm-hmm.
And it really, it makes clear sense when you get into that whole transgenderism and all that. This is, where does it stop?
You know? It doesn't.
Anyway, they deal with the crisis of the priesthood. This is very interesting as well. And He argues for priestly celibacy. He says, what do you see as the primary cause in the cases of sexual abuse of minors by priests? This is the question being asked of the cardinal. And he says, and it's so true, he says, I think that the crisis of the priesthood is one of the main factors in the crisis of the church. We have taken away priests' identity. We've made priests believe that they need to be efficient men, but a priest is fundamentally the continuation of Christ's presence among us. He should not be defined by what he does, but what he is, Christ himself. The discovery of many cases of sexual abuse against minors reveals a profound spiritual crisis, a grave, deep, tragic rupture between the priest and Christ. And of course, he says there are social factors, the crisis of the 60s and the sexualization of society, which rebound on the church. I've said that many times, haven't I, that the obsession, when people will accuse the church of it's obsessive, being obsessive with sex, I says, isn't the church's obsession, it's society's obsession, but it rebounds on the church. And the cardinal says, Cardinal Serra, we must have the courage to go further. The roots of this crisis are spiritual. A priest who does not pray or makes a theater out of the sacraments, especially the Eucharist, a priest who only confesses rarely and who does not live concretely like another Christ, is cut off from the source of his own being. The result is death. He dedicated the book to the priest because he says throughout the whole world, he knows that they're suffering. They many, many, many feel abandoned by their own bishops. And this is so true. He says, we, the bishops, bear large share of responsibility for the crisis of the priesthood. Have we been fathers to them? Have we listened to them, understood and guided them? Have we given them an example? Too often, so true, he says, too often, dioceses are transformed into administrative structures.
Yeah.
There are too many meetings, so many meetings. We ourselves are far from being the ones most ready to pray in silence, to chant the office in our cathedrals. The place of the priest is on the cross. When he celebrates Mass, he is the source of his whole, namely, when he celebrates Mass, he is at the source of his whole life, namely the cross. Celibacy is a concrete means that permits us to live this mystery of the cross in our lives. Celibacy inscribes the cross in our very flesh. That is why celibacy is intolerable for the modern world. Celibacy is a scandal for modern people because the cross is a scandal. So he says in the book, he encourages priests. He tells them, love your priesthood. Be proud to be crucified with Christ. Do not fear the world's hate. Anyway, got to take one final break here. We'll do that. We'll be right back. And Father Anthony, you're listening to Listener Supported Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ.
Celebrate the Easter Triduum with a beautiful liturgy filled with sacred music, incense, and candles in one of the most magnificent churches in the United States. You are invited to the historic St. Stanislaus Kostka Church, the Sanctuary of the Divine Mercy. The Triduum begins with Holy Thursday Mass at 7 p.m., Good Friday Liturgy at 3 p.m., Holy Saturday Mass at 7 p.m., Easter Sunday Mass at 10 a.m. St. Stanislaus Kostka Church is located just minutes from downtown Chicago at 1327 North Noble Street. That's 1327 North Noble Street, one block west of the Kennedy Expressway at the Division Street exit. Plenty of free parking available. For more information, call 773-278-2470. 773-278-2470. That's 773-278-2470.
The Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ and on the World Wide Web at windsofchangeshow.com.
Winds of Change would like you to know that Illinois will become even more extreme on abortion if several pieces of legislation are passed and signed into law. HB 2495/SB 1942 is known as the New York Abortion Bill. This bill makes abortion a basic right for any reason or no reason at all, up to birth. Among the many shortcomings, this bill jeopardizes any meaningful regulation of abortion clinics. Sadly, this bill would make Roe v. Wade seem pro-life in comparison. Then there is HB 2467/SB 1594, which is the repeal of the parental notice of abortion law. An abortion will no longer require the notice of just one parent when a girl under 18 years old seeks an abortion. This bill effectively takes the power from parents and transfers it to boyfriends, sex traffickers, bullies, classmates, and educators. Contact your local state senator and House representative this week. Do it now with a kind but firm message not to support these bills. Go online to sign a petition with your friends and families at ICE-PAC.com/petition. That's ICE-PAC.com/petition. For more information, visit the Winds of Change homepage on Facebook. Put your faith into action.
Welcome back, everybody. Thanks for being with us. So today I'm just sharing a little bit about the this interview with Cardinal Serra, who just, this is a prophetic voice in the church at this time, and a voice that needs to be heard from Africa, from Guinea, French Guinea. And I said, if I were God, I'd put him in the, raise him to the papacy. We need this kind of prophetic voice today to set us on that that right path. But he, just a few things, because we're just about, we're only 2 minutes from the close of the show, but there was a question that was asked of him, this book, In the Closet of the Vatican. This is, I don't want to go too much into this, but it's the accusation or the suggestion that there's a powerful gay network at the heart of the church or the heart of the curia. And what do you think of this? And is there a homosexual problem in the heart of the church? And if so, why is it a taboo? And he says, today the church is living with Christ through the outrages of the passion, that someone will adopt the judgments and language of the world. Some bishops have caved into the pressure, calling for the abandonment of priestly celibacy or making unsound statements about homosexual acts. Should we be surprised? He said, the apostles themselves turned tail in the Garden of Olives. They abandoned Christ in his most difficult hour. But he says, we have to be realistic and concrete. Yes, there are sinners, unfaithful priests, bishops, and even cardinals who fail to observe chastity. They fail to hold fast to doctrinal truth. They disorient the Christian faithful by their confusing and ambiguous language. They adulterate and falsify the Word of God, willing to twist and bend to gain it to gain the world's approval. They are the Judas Iscariots of our time. He said, sin should not surprise us. We're in a spiritual combat. What's needed is prayer, penance, and fasting. I'm going to really quick, because we're out of time, with regard to homosexual behaviors, he said, let us not fall into the trap of the manipulators. He said, there's no homosexual problem in the church. There's a problem of sins and infidelity. Let us not perpetuate the vocabulary of LGBT ideology. Homosexuality does not define the identity of persons. It describes certain deviant, sinful, and perverse acts. For these acts and for these and for other sins, the remedies are known. We must return to Christ, allow him to convert us. He even says that punishment is merciful, an act of charity and fraternal love. Just got to leave it at that right now. There's more. Maybe we'll come back to it later.
But yeah.
A prophetic voice needs to be heard. Everybody, thanks for being with us. Have a blessed day. Enjoy the day. Get out, because it's going to be cold again tomorrow. And they said maybe snow.
Yeah.
Who knows? Almighty God bless you, the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit.
Amen.
John.
What's there to say when the world makes no sense? Do we search deeper truths or sit on the fence? Can you see? Can you see? Meaningless thought. The shell appears strong, but the inside is rot. It's time to be stirred. The time.